Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Now, I suppose you all know how ordinary television works. You photograph something...
Sure, I do. You photograph something, and then the photograph is split up into millions of tiny pieces, and they go whizzing through the air down to your TV set where they're all put together again in the right order.
You should open your mouth a little wider when you speak.
So this week, I haven't been watching a whole lot. I've been stewing in the sadness as my favorite comic book, The Walking Dead, came to an end.
I found him.
What's the deal with comedians getting coffee while they're in cars with Jerry Seinfeld?
You know that you not doing stand-up drives people crazy. You know that, right?
The last time I saw Don Rickles, and Rickles was like maybe a month or two before he passed away, and he just went on and on and on like that, like you do.
Really?
But you have to do stand-up again. You have to just went on and on about it. Wow. I'm going to do it again. It
was really?
Just, yeah, I just had to, you know, everything has to be right.
I am caught up on Big Little Lies. Not as good as the first season, but I'm still enjoying it.
Hey, if you're one of the few people who thought they didn't smoke enough in Stranger Things Season 3, go back and rewatch Mad Men on Netflix and get as much smoking and drinking while at work as your heart desires.
Everybody else's tobacco is poisonous. Lucky Strikes is toasted.
What do women want? Who cares?
Oh, yeah, starring Elizabeth Moss, who's in Handmaid's Tale, which I am still watching. And even though I know people are complaining it's slow, I am enjoying her performance very much. But this season, Ann Dowd is stealing the show.
May I go home, please?
You may go home when your walking partner goes home.
Love to watch TV, Mike?
You bet.
You like the killings, huh?
What do you think life's all about?
Hello, my Snoopies. My Sigmunds. My howdy doodies.
Hi, Daddy.
Are you happy? I hope you're happy.
Happy, Daddy.
So happy.
Daddy had a hard day. A bad day. He made a big mess. Are you mad at Daddy?
No.
No, Daddy. We're not mad. But we got a little bit of a problem here with the clock. And I got a family to protect.
We've all got family. We are family. Now that we're calm, tell me, what happened back there? What a time loop like that.
In the Hall of Time, there are demons.
Wait, demons?
I call them demons, Emma. Or maybe they're just the animals of time. Predators.
Okay, in the future, if there are time demons, tell me about the time demons.
Sorry.
This week is Mike TV, episode 8, in which we will be covering Legion, season 3, episode 4, called chapter 23. Oh boy. Consequences episode, right, Dean? What were your thoughts on this one?
They've been telling us the consequences are coming, and finally we see Time Cats coming for us all.
Mm-hmm. The creepiest demons, I think, ever. Really, seriously, this was just, they were so creepy with their big smiles and those sinister giggles. They were just... And the way they did that stop motion movement, it was just really, really, really interesting and fun to watch and super creepy.
Yeah, the way they filmed them is what made them so creepy. I guess about an hour before the episode, saw a picture online of one of these things, just a still picture of a person in a costume, not filmed. And I almost thought it had to be fake, because if you see just a person in this costume, it looked silly. It looked ridiculous. And man, it was from the very beginning to the very end, they were awesome. And I know this is kind of the common opinion by a lot of people, but they definitely had a Blue Meanie vibe from the Yellow Submarine cartoon of the Beatles. But what I like about it is I don't think I've seen anyone else other than us lately pulling out the Yellow Submarine font from the FX Presents over the whole season. I finally took the time to look it up this week. It is the Yellow Submarine font. It's the actual font from Yellow Submarine. And so these time demons kind of have that Blue Meanie look, maybe with a mixture of the Cheshire Cat from Alice in Wonderland, how their eyes would always appear before anything else. So it was pretty cool.
We saw the Cheshire Cat mobile that Lenny was driving in the second episode. So
there you go.
Good tie in. Oh, fun. This was a fun episode. Ultimately, this was a fun episode. I've watched it twice like I always do. I'm sure you did too. And I enjoyed it just as much. And I thought I could actually watch it again and enjoy it again. It was so much fun. So good. So, shall we get into
This is probably actually more of a one-off episode than even last week. We talked about, we thought last week would be the one-off episode. Mm-hmm. This one almost had that full feel of, I don't really know how much these time demons will keep sticking around. It seemed like there was a complete arc with them throughout this.
Yeah.
And it was crazy. It didn't really push the full plot along, but it was so well made and such a cool story that I don't think anyone can fault what this episode was. This is, as a single episode, probably one of the top two or three episodes of the entire series.
Yay. I agree. I loved it. And you know what it did do? Ultimately, it got switched the hell away from David. It got, and then, you know, by the end, he's declared war. So it's put him down the path. I hate to say it. I still, you know what? I'm team Dan Stevens. He really deserves some critical accolades for his performance. And when he can move from maniacal to tender and innocent in just the blink of an eye. And that's what makes me want to root for Team David. I still want his innocence to be real and honest. And I know it's not, but I think by the end of this episode, it's true. He's not going to be redeemable. It's not happening.
Yeah, I mean, hey, people thought Hitler was a nice guy too, I'm sure.
Oh gosh, don't compare him to Hitler. All right, let's get into it. So we open on Ptonomy getting his mustache clipped, and he's in the cockpit, or the head of the ship, and Carrie's walking around talking about how she misses Carrie and everybody feels so different now. And Ptonomy starts talking about a temporal compromise, and then everything kind of just flashes, and then he's on the ground, and Carrie's holding him, and Ptonomy's saying so much data lost. And then Carrie, next thing we see Carrie, this is female Carrie, by the way, is speaking with Sid, and Sid is saying, so you're saying something is wrong with time, and Carrie has no memory of saying that. So then they see an apple on the desk that begins to rot, and they hear giggling. And then our Legion title card opens up with a notebook flipping through pages as the word Legion starts to unravel page by page with a little neat drawing of Switch. So what'd you think of this opening scene?
Actually, Lauren Tsai, is that her last? Lauren Tsai is the actress that plays Switch.
I believe so. Yes, good.
She did those drawings for the notebook.
Really?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. So she actually drew all those, which I thought was cool. We do actually see, and I didn't catch this till a later viewing. We actually see one of the demon's eyes pop up as they leave that room with the apple. So right before the apple completely goes away, we see one of the blue eyes kind of form in. So that's where we first kind of start.
When we
the giggling starts right before they leave. That's when they decide they leave. But then we actually see one of the blue eyeballs kind of form there. I liked it. I liked Carrie coming in, you know, hey, remember fun? Remember when we used to have fun? And it was kind of a nice little throwback to just the show in general of, you know, we're getting serious now type of thing. And the show used to be kind of them, the adventures of David in Division Three, and now it's David versus Division Three, and it's not fun anymore. Now there's it's business time. So I liked it. I love the glitches. I love the way that this is filmed. It reminded me a lot of every scene we saw in season two with future Sid. When they were in the future, we saw that kind of, there was those constant glitches going on. So we've already been previewed to this a little bit when it comes to time, as far as how it affects things going on in the future. So a nice little intro for it.
Why was Tonami's mustache growing?
Why does Tonami have a mustache? Isn't that our question we had from the very first episode? I have no idea. I don't know. He's a robot, right? So you're right. Why would it be growing? I don't know. Why is Tonami even this is the one retcon of this season, I think, where it's like we realized Baskethead was dumb. So let's just put Tonami with his Yondu haircut and we'll put him there instead.
Yondu haircut. Yeah, I don't know. That's great.
I don't know.
All right. So next we see Salmon. She has her head in Lenny's lap, and this is kind of a fun scene. They're watching the rest of the I read something. I think it was in the subtitles. These people that are around David, they're called his acolytes. So I will start using that terminology as well. So the acolytes are out on the sidewalk playing hopscotch, and Lenny and Salmon are just lying in the grass. And Salmon is saying that they're sure to have a girl because, you know, science, a girl plus a girl, of course, makes a girl. And so Lenny starts asking about what kind of names, and of course, you know, hints to like maybe another fish name, and Salmon doesn't get that her name is a fish. She thinks it's a color, which it's both, of course. But she says, what about Violet? And then Lenny, which great performance, of course, by Aubrey Plaza. Aubrey says Violence instead of Violet, and then comes up with the full name, Violence Lollipop Busker. And that was a great name. And then she starts talking about what does Salmon think about the possibility of her giving notice and them hitting the road and leaving David. So what about this scene? Let me wrap it up by saying then David and Switch start falling through the door many times. This is presumably them coming back from the time travel from last episode. And every time they fall through, he keeps saying we have to go back, and then they fall through again. But every time Switch's lip is bleeding, and Lenny keeps looking over and saying, hey, Squirt, you got a little, you know, touching her lip, which was just fabulous.
I love this entire scene. Lenny is, we kind of have seen this through the season. This, in fact, this may be one of the few drawbacks of this short season, is that I think those of us who watch and get the show have totally understood this is coming with Lenny. Irby, Bonnie, and Clyde off by themselves, and now all of a sudden, she's almost from the very first episode, she seemed frustrated that she's out of the loop, that he needs someone other than her. We saw her questioning Carrie when he recruited him. And now we see she's ready to leave. And I wish they would have maybe formed a little bit more bond between her and Salmon, or New Janine, or whatever her name is. But I do like that she kind of is finally ready to just live a regular life. Like, she realizes maybe all this is just not necessary. So I do like that. I love her line when she goes, but you're the breakfast queen. She goes, well, maybe it's lunchtime.
Yeah.
That was like that. That line was a cool line. You could tell they cut a little bit, but it did seem like they almost filmed that concurrently, of them kind of refalling and saying the same thing, but a little bit different each time. It wasn't just the same scene over and over. It was slightly you know, whether they articulate a little bit different or said it, it was just a cool way to show that Switch finally realizing that they're in a loop, and she seems confused from the very first time it happens, but they stop it. And this starts, you know, the trouble with everything. This is where we start seeing everything start falling off the rails.
Right. So we cut away from that scene and on to Sid talking to, I guess it's really Potonomy. Sometimes they say Tonomy, sometimes they say Potonomy. This season they seem to be saying Potonomy, so I should correct.
Right.
So Sid is talking to Potonomy and the Vermilion, and they see something in the scope, and so they're, this is where Sid says, oh, this is how he does it. This is how he destroys the world. And then a demon, we hear the giggling again, and a demon starts to come through the scope that they're looking through, and it's coming through in that stop motion animation, and its arm comes through and they manage to chop it off, which stops it. Now, I watched this very closely, and I could not figure out what are they seeing in the scope that is alerting Sid, that they're also fascinated by this image in the scope. It just looked like a desk to me or something. I could not tell what it was.
That's where you can see. You got to look for those bright blue eyes, because they actually, that's what they see. First, just see the bright blue eyes. Then you kind of see the figure. And so every time they look at it and every time it loops, because it loops three times, I think, it gets a little bit closer. And finally it starts reaching its hand through. And that's when Farouk comes in, which I love that Farouk seems to have the powers. He's the one person that seems not affected by this time, because he's not being directly affected by it. But he walks in as they're, you know, worried about this. And he closes it, tells him, be gone, demon. Closes it, cuts its arm off. And he's kind of the one that saves him right there. So I love that he, again, is put in a position of almost being a hero to them. Mm-hmm. You know, he is the most powerful person on their team by far. So you know me, anytime the Farouk man can show out, I'm all into it.
He does that.
Shadow King for life.
He does that several times this episode.
Oh, but yeah.
Not ever with anything but malice in his heart, I'm sure. So, all right. So we cut to David is in his mind chamber in his yoga position. He's thinking of his mom holding him as a baby. And then Lenny comes in and says that they're ready for him. And before he walks out to address his acolytes, he does grab her face and kind of cup it with his hands. And she says, you know, are you, she says, are you okay? And he says, I don't remember what he says, but she was like, is that a yes? What is it that he says back? Remind me.
I don't remember what he says right after that. But yeah, I can't tell if he's trying to manipulate her again when he does that, when he grabs her face, but he definitely seems frustrated with her.
I think
and you can tell it's almost, he just seems frustrated with his role as the leader. Like, he doesn't want to do that right now. He's busy remembering his mom, trying to figure out this whole problem. And he's like, oh yeah, I got to deal with all these people.
Well, I think he also maybe senses the earlier conversation that she had with Salmon about wanting to leave, right?
Possibly.
So he's addressing his acolytes in the room, you know, in the main room of the house. And I love that he calls them Snoopies, Sigmunds, and Howdy Doodies. And but what I really hate, I really detest how he referred to himself in the third person as Daddy, and they keep responding in unison, calling him Daddy. And so he says, are you mad at Daddy? No, we're not mad at Daddy. Oh, sickening. Switch is in the room, and she starts to explain that there are demons in the Hall of Time, which was very funny. David's reaction was very funny. He asks, in the future, if there are time demons, tell me about them. And then he asks her to explain them, and she describes them like that they're blue and that they're like cats and that they eat time. Then the acolytes start asking David to make them feel good, and we see him kind of send out the mind waves over the whole room, and they all kind of fall back in ecstasy. And Lenny, who's at the end of the room, demands to know the plan. And David starts telling her to be nice. You know, he needs her to be nice. And she says, chop, chop, mama, mama's boy, get to work, which was a funny line. And David declares that this is his time and he's got things to do. So whatever is thrown at him, he'll slay them all. Switch starts to complain about her loose teeth and protesting not to want to go back. And David starts to say if he has to, he'll force her. And as that's happening, the demons start to creep in and he senses them. And then, of course, they sense them too. And he addresses them by saying that he's the Alpha and the Omega and that he eats demons for breakfast. And that's when we start to see again this stop animation, slow motion demon movement. And then he tells them to run. And as he prepares to fight them, he's then whisked into a prison. And before we get into that prison scene, what do you want to say? I'm going a little fast through this scene, so I'll back it up. What do you want to say about David and his acolytes and then David and Switch?
Anytime a man refers to himself as daddy, it's creepy unless you're talking to a child. I try not to even say that to my own children, because if the word daddy comes out of my mouth, it makes me feel like a creep.
So we're anti-daddy, for the record.
No, yeah, no daddy. Daddy not likey. I love Lenny standing up to him. I like that she's almost kind of his, the one thing he has left is like a filter or a break or like a conscience, not a good conscience, but a like, hey, dumbass, what are you doing at this point? You know, he says, we all want to have sex with you. We get it. Stop with the ego jerk. She's tired of him just making it seem like, oh, everything's fine. Everything's fine. She fights that urge. She stands up to him. She even says, I don't want you to be nice. You know, I'm not trying to make you be nice. I'm trying to make you mad. Like she wants that red. She likes the red. She doesn't like the blue, David. She likes the red, David. Yeah, so she wants that anger to come out because, well, and she knows that if he, I think she signed on thinking they were going to be fighting Division III and fighting the world instead of doing hippie commune crap. She wants, you know, Lenny's a person of chaos. I know we kind of see her, and I think she might change that after this episode from the experience she has. But up until this point where she actually talks about leaving and having the kid, she's always been a person of chaos. She wants the fight. She likes the fight. And so she wants that from David instead of him worried about himself. And that's all David is showing right now, that he really only cares about himself. He's drug. I mean, we've been seeing this through this episode, but he's continuing to just drug these people that he's with orgasmic, you know, feelings. So he's basically mind raping everybody who's part of his group, you know, whether it's the same thing as Sid or not, but he is basically just pacifying them with sex. It is obviously very Charlie Manson family type vibes. And he is definitely doing the same thing as kind of Manson did with his people, which is pacifying them with drugs and sex. I mean, that's really what this is. And so he's doing that to them, but I do like that David kind of goes back and forth in this episode a lot, but I love when he always finally stands up to the problem. He does kind of get that confidence and that badassness of him up. And so once he realized the time demons are there, it's come on here, kitty, you know, bring it on. He's just ready for the fight. I love that. I love that he's kind of surprised by them, where they're the way that they do the clock ticking with their movements is awesome.
Yes.
And you know, it seems like it's going to be like a normal clock ticking by seconds, but then all of a sudden it like pauses and jumps like 3 seconds. So I like how it shows that the time demons themselves can just jump through time at any point when they want to. And I like that they kind of take him by surprise. So it's a very cool scene, and it kind of sets up this split for the rest of the episode, which is cool, which we start seeing in a little bit, where almost all the characters get kind of taken off to their own little battle with the time demons. It's pretty neat.
Right. And I think what really starts that, well, okay. So I think the way we both watch this, maybe it has commercials. So this show does cut, you know, to a commercial and come back. So David's whisked into that prison as he is attempting to fight the demons. And in the prison, he sees that his mother is in the cell next to him. And she looks at him and tells him that this is the beginning of the end. and then it cuts to commercial. So I think when it comes back to commercial, this is where we really start to see how much everybody is being affected by these time demons, because we move into straight up a scene from another FX show called The Shield.
Oh, hey, Lisa.
Yes.
Who's your favorite character from The Shield? Let's just talk about The Shield the rest of the show. Let's do that for another 30 minutes, because I could have, if they would have just started showing The Shield the rest of this hour, I'd have been in. I'd be 100% in. One of my favorite all-time shows.
I profess to love TV, and The Shield is one that I've actually never watched. I'm familiar with that dude. I know that, you know, I mean, I definitely saw enough of the commercials and enough promos for it. So I knew that that's what it was, and I loved it. I thought that was just brilliant. But no, I never watched The Shield. I never saw The Shield or The Wire, which are two just shows. I don't know why I connect to one another. I know they're completely different networks, yeah. But I know I need to go back and see them both.
Yeah, The Shield is one of the best cop dramas. Michael Chiklis is awesome. And also, this is kind of really the first big vehicle for Walter Goggins, who is one of my favorite actors now, from Justified, from all his movie roles lately. He's fantastic in The Hateful Eight. Vice Principals. Yeah, great.
In my opinion, he's the best one in The Hateful Eight. I love The Hateful Eight, but he didn't get enough of a role in it. He was so good. Yeah, I agree. I love him. I never saw Justified, though. Can you believe
that? So hopefully next week they'll do a complete backflip to Justified. That'll be the next time. maybe it'll just be a whole Walter Goggins indirect theme. That would be great too. All right, anyway. Then we get zapped back to Legion.
That fun scene from The Shield, and that scene is being affected by the time demons. We are the giggling kind of at the end of that scene as that they start to repeat their lines. It was very funny. And then the great scene of the Division 3 ship flying in the air, and it jumps from backward to forward, backward to forward. And then Farouk is standing in the hallway with Carrie and Clark and Sid, although Sid starts to walk off as Farouk is telling them that they have to go fight these time demons in the time between time and kill them at their nest in an area where they can't affect them. So as Carrie starts to say, you know, what weapons will I need? Farouk zaps them out. Farouk, Carrie, and Clark all zap out, but Sid wanders off and meets her 15-year-old version of herself and starts to tell her that time is collapsing. Pretty soon will be nothing at all. And then in a later scene, they will start to discuss Sid's first sexual encounter. So I guess we'll come on to that. But what any thoughts about them, about Farouk taking them into the time in between time? Because I think when we get to those scenes, which are also coming up, or this could be the part where we just start talking about each character and kind of wrap up each character. You want to do that?
I think
is the time in between time scenes might have been my favorites.
They were okay. Yeah, I think it's a good point to where we can kind of just start following the character arc. So let's do that. And then we'll obviously get to David at the end when he wraps everything up kind of on his own.
Let's do that. Yeah, Farouk, so let's talk about, you want to talk about Farouk and the time? So Farouk and Carrie and Clark are all, this is going to be talk about how this show has some great David Lynch vibes. This was straight up, this reminded me of something that you would straight up see in Twin Peaks. It was, or any David Lynch film or production. It was just stop motion film, very sketched together with weird clicky sounds in between, and title, whenever they would want to speak, it would just be a title card. Kind of like an old fashioned film, but so it starts out, it's comedic. They're getting there. Farouk's kind of explaining to Clark and Carrie where they are, and they're just kind of moving around in this stop motion movement. And at one point, we see Farouk kill some beast, and then he's next scene, he's cooking it in a campfire and offering some to Clark, who is declining. That was a funny moment.
Yeah, it's like a big saber-toothed moose. It's got giant antlers, but also these giant teeth. It's got blue guts. It's a very weird animal. It was awesome. I loved it.
Yeah.
I love Bruce to feed it to Clark.
Yes. So then I want to get to my notes here. So they start to move into a cave where they actually find the time demon nest, and they're ready to fight them, and they're not doing so well. Carrie and Clark are not doing so well, and then Fruit comes in and pulls a big sword out of his mouth, which was fabulous, and promptly cuts one in half. Now, these scenes are unfolding, spliced in between the other character scenes, so as this scene is wrapped up, as David eventually completes the mission at the end to get the time demons to back off. So this is kind of where we'll leave them for the time being, but know that they are fighting the time demons in the time between time. And let's move into Sid, shall we? Because the Sid stuff, unless did you have anything else about the time between time stuff?
Yeah, I liked that it was kind of a mix of a silent movie and almost their version of what a comic book would actually look like as far as the panels, yes. You know?
Yes.
That was cool. I liked that the time demons apparently live in a giant mailbox. When they find their kids, it's a giant mailbox. It reminded me a lot of the giant tub stopper from season 2.
Yeah, and like the giant toothbrush this time between we see later.
Oh, yes. This... I totally forgot about toothbrush. This definitely, the time between time area reminded me the most of the whole desert that was a valley in season 2, as far as kind of we never really were sure if it was real or not. So I enjoyed that. Again, Farouk showing off he's a badass, which I'm always for. So,
yeah, well, he was definitely showing off some mad skills, but I'm not always for that, for sure. All right, so let's talk about Sid, because I think if I have any complaints about this show, about this episode, it was the Sid stuff went on a bit too long with a story that we already knew about Sid's first sexual encounter. You know, essentially Sid and her 15-year-old self are talking, and her 15-year-old self is relating about the story that we saw in season 1 about how Sid, when she was 15, wanted to know what sex was like, but because she couldn't touch anybody, she couldn't do it. So she found her mother passed out and her mother's boyfriend in the shower. And so she touched her mother, switched places with her mother, went into the shower, had sex with him in the shower. The perspective from young Sid is that she didn't like being turned around as her first sexual experience, and you know, I mean, who can blame her? But current Sid tells her that's because it was about power, and she starts to tell younger Sid about how when she grows up she will fall in love and it will be real and it will be with a good person, and we can see that she's thinking about David at that time. But then, you know, she quickly goes back into doomsday mode. But what did you think of this conversation between Sid and her younger self?
I liked it. I thought it gave us at least a slightly different perspective of the scene from that season. We saw it from her child's perspective.
Was it different, though? I mean, wasn't that how it happened? And
no, it was it, but we saw how she thought about it as a child versus how we kind of implied it just being almost like a rebellious thing, because that's what it kind of seemed more like when we saw the scene. Now, I mean, I don't know if turning her around was about power. When you're in the shower, it's hard to stand up and face each other like that, so maybe it was just about leverage. There is that metaphor that they start using of her face pushed up against the glass and being turned around. Sid uses that talking about David later on, that you'll fall in love, but then he turned me around eventually.
So public service announcement here, like what Sid should have said to her younger self was, look, you were 15 years old. You were too young to be having sex, much let alone with a man twice your age or even older. And that's what older people do when they have sex. Sometimes it's like that. Don't take it personally. Get over it.
That's what she should have said, right?
Yeah, probably. I do like how she described her power, because it almost made it sound like her power was sleeping with other people. You know, it was almost a metaphor of anonymous sex constantly, of you touch someone and then you're gone and they're inside you. You smell them afterwards, and when you get back, you feel dirty.
It was really sad. So
it was
very sad.
Yeah, it was sad. It was an interesting conversation. It might have gone on a little too long. But then, of course, we find out that.
Right. So it ends.
It went on as long as they wanted. Yeah.
It ends with them deciding, well, what would happen if they hugged each other? Would they switch places? So they hug, and for a moment, it's sweet and tender. And then we see younger Sid, 15-year-old Sid, turn into one of the time demons. And she pushes Sid down onto the ground and is clearly about to, I don't know, bite her face off or attack her in some way, possibly rape her. And Sid, as she's fighting, her head is moving back and forth very quickly, side to side, and is kind of in the time jumps, moving to all many faces of Sid. She's going from young Sid to middle-aged Sid. And that was a neat scene. Scary, yeah, but neat.
If you remember last week, I told you when David shows up in front of Gabrielle at the crib at the end, he looked like half of him was an older version of himself. So I got that feeling again of that there is when you're either the time demons are coming at you, or you're traveling through time. Eventually you kind of get this point to where it's almost all of you throughout time at the same time. And so you're kind of occupying your own self throughout all iterations of time. So it made me think of that, which I thought was, you know, like it definitely glared out to me.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk about Lenny, whose story, as if it couldn't get any sadder than Sid. Lenny is running with Salmon. And they run into a room where the time demons catch up with them, and Salmon starts to go into labor. And next thing you know, Lenny's holding her baby. And next thing you know, and time just keeps jumping very quickly. Next thing you know, Salmon's gone, and her daughter is now, you know, 5 or 6 years old, drawing a picture. And then the next scene, suddenly her daughter is an adult woman speaking to her. You know, they're just talking sitting on a bed talking. And then the next scene is her daughter is a very old lady dying in her bed and hugging Lenny and saying, I'm so glad you came. And Lenny is clearly emotionally distraught over watching the birth of her daughter and her daughter's entire lifespan flash before her eyes. And it leaves Lenny just in a state, writhing on the floor, screaming in agony. All right. So what did you think of Lenny's very sad journey here?
She gets a lifetime of love, companionship, and pain under 30 seconds or however long it was. Just absolutely heartbreaking. We see her go from being confused to completely accepting the fact that she's with her daughter. And I love it showing that she with the baby. It shows the rebellious teen. It shows the middle-aged mom complaining about her daughter and saying, well, I guess it runs in the family. And then, of course, she's happy to see her mom there when she's on her deathbed. And at the end, when everything's gone, Lenny still sees that drawing that the 4-year-old or whatever age Violet made for her. And she starts screaming in agony. Aubrey Plaza, you know, we talk about it every week. She is absolutely amazing. I don't know how, if she doesn't win an award for this season, which I guess would be next year, it'll, or at least be nominated, it'll be baffling to me.
She and Dan Stevens both deserve a nomination. You know they won't get it. And honestly, Noah Hawley deserves a nomination for writing, I guess. But it, you know they won't get recognized, which is just a damn shame. Really is. Really is. So do you take that as what the Time Demons managed to do is basically done? So do you take that as her child was born and is also now dead?
I don't know. There is a lot to think about at the end of this, if actually, you know, what the actual long-term repercussions of this incident are, because I don't know if we're done seeing Sam and that she's just gone now and the kid's gone too. When it comes to Sid, I don't know if the Time Demons have eaten her young memories of herself to where she'll remember every, you know, any of that happening. It'll be interesting to kind of see what the fallout is of all this with the different characters next episode.
Yeah. All right. So before we move into David, who ultimately, quote unquote, saves the day in this episode, let's talk about Carrie Loudermilk, the male Carrie Loudermilk, that is.
Glasses McLab coat.
Yes. So as the camera moves in, before we get to his lab, I know you appreciated this. There was this great scene. So chaos is breaking loose in the house, in David's house, with his acolytes. And there is that great scene with the lunchboxes all lined up. And as the Time Demons move over them, they all just kind of smash into dust. It was really good. And do you want to talk about your lunchbox? Because I felt like that was a great way to segue into what I covet the most in this world right now. Is your lunchbox, Dean.
Speaking of lunchboxes, I finally got my delivery this week. In fact, I wasn't sure what it was because it was right after Prime Day, so I wasn't sure if it was a bunch of the stupid crap I ordered off Amazon. but I opened this box up. I received this beautiful black hard cardboard box with a like magnetized lid on it that says Legion on it. Opened it up. There was a beautifully custom designed lunchbox. It's not one of the designs that with his full face on it like you see in the show, although some people did get those. It looks like there were several designs sent out. Yeah, in fact, I've seen at least four online that people have gotten, which I think is pretty cool. Yeah, it's pretty neat. So the one I have, it's mostly black. It says Legion on the front, and on the back it shows David's face in the center and almost like a Russian nesting doll outside of his face. It's Farouk's face open. It's Farouk's face opened up, and then outside of Farouk's face, it's the baby's face opened up, David as a baby. So it's this really cool lunchbox, along with a lunchbox, which I had no idea I would get. I got a thermos with the same design on it.
Yeah.
And a bottle of Mutant Mints, the flavor being Potonomy's Peppermints. I have seen one of the other...
You're not opening those.
No. Okay, good. No, in fact, I was worried. The only reason I wanted to open one was because I was hoping maybe it was really a solid version of the David Blue Drug or something.
Sure.
Some of the other ones I've seen online, I think Farouk has a version of the mints out there, and there's maybe one other character I've seen, but I like that they've sent out several different versions of these lunch boxes. So everybody's got something different there. And I think they only sent 100 things out. So it's pretty cool.
Wow.
I was very excited. Yeah.
So cool. Well, that was a brilliant marketing campaign that they did. They put it out on Twitter, and they just kind of made it a call out on Twitter at first come, first served. And Eagle Eye Rockdale Tiger was all over it. And good job. Good job getting one of those. That's incredibly cool. So the lunchbox smash happens in the show, and the Time Demons start to mess with Carrie in his lab. You know, as he's tinkering with things, they're kind of moving around him and sneaking up close, taking off as his eyes will dart to him, and they're messing with whatever he's tinkering with. And eventually they manage to push the David goo out of Carrie's head, and it just becomes this pile of blue goo on a stool next to Carrie. And Carrie bends over the David blue goo, and is as he touches it, he remembers the scenes back from episode 2 when he was first kidnapped, and he remembers, you know, the scenes of David taking over and saying, "Let me lead." And he eventually looks up and says treachery and realizes that David has fucked with his mind. And he starts to work his way through the house. There's some good visuals at this point of the time demons in the halls. This is where we really start to see them for the first time, what they look like with their pointy weird heads and their big creepy grins. And he finds Switch. He's hiding out in the big pig room. He opens the room where the big pig with the big teats is, and a bunch of the acolytes come running out in terror, and Switch is hiding in there with a big toothbrush for whatever reason. And Carrie tells her that he's here to rescue her, and eventually she agrees to go with him. And when they realize they can't get through the house after they walk through many interesting time anomalies through the house, like smoking piles of dust and that one scene where people are frozen in time and she warns him not to touch it or he'll freeze too. And eventually, as they find out there's no escape, she remembers the tunnel that she originally crawled through and suggests they crawl through that tunnel. So before we get outside the tunnel, you want to talk about these scenes with Carrie and Switch? Or Carrie in particular?
Yeah, I 100% thought that one of the time demons took a shit on that stool, because that's just what it looked like, a big blue pile of poop. But yeah, it was definitely the treachery outside of his head. I like that he uses that phrase again, because he first used that in season 2 when he discovered when David tricked Sid. So he kind of called back to that. I love when he meets Switch and tries to speak to her in Chinese and she doesn't understand anything he said. So obviously he's just terrible at Chinese, I guess.
That was funny.
Carrie continues to be the funniest person on the show. I think every time he's on the screen, even when it's something serious, he makes everything lighthearted. He's definitely the comic relief of the show.
And he says, he lets her know David had his thrall over him, and he said, "I can only imagine what he's done to you."
Right, absolutely. And because we still haven't really seen why Switch is with David, we still don't know why she's so, 100% with him, even when he seems to constantly just use her. Like you said earlier, like we saw earlier in the episode when he even says, "Don't make me force you." He starts saying, basically threatening her, and she still seems to be completely under his spell. So she's definitely under the David, drinking the Kool-Aid still. Cool scene. It looked like several people were evaporated. You see their shoes with dust sitting around it. And then they escape through the tunnel, it was kind of cool when she reveals the tunnel. You start hearing the tambourines from that first song in the first episode of the season of Something for Your Mind. So that was a neat little callback as well, too.
I found out something interesting about that Something for Your Mind song, and maybe you mentioned it, and I just didn't recall, but did we talk about that was the actual band performing that song in the show?
No.
Had you heard that?
No, I didn't. I didn't know if it was an original for the show or if it was an existing song or not.
I'll find out the name of the band and put it in the show notes, or I think it was in the show notes for our episode 1 coverage. But that actually was the band performing it with those clothes racks. And
cool.
So that was cool that they were hired to do that. So they crawl. We don't really see them crawl through the tunnel. That was one of the commercial breaks. But when they come back from commercial, they are through the tunnel and out on the other side. And oh my God, this being Switch is free, right? And they immediately go into this very cool looking red phone booth where Carrie has, of course, a great receiver gadget that he's able to screw into the phone and call Division 3. That was a fun scene.
Yeah, I like that the phone booth was a giant refrigerator.
even to the point to where there were eggs in the back, like when they're inside it, you can see eggs on the shelf behind them.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Yeah, that was kind of funny.
I do love the scene where he is, so at this point, the TAM demons are still attacking. They're attacking Division 3, and Carrie calls, gets through to Division 3 and is talking to Patonomy, and he says, I lost my space in my notes. Sorry. He says, this is the male louder milk, which I thought was a great line. And
love that.
Patonomy says, I keep saying system 181 error. And Carrie, of course, who's invented all of this equipment, knows this wisely. He very wisely knows system 181 is a time error. And so he knows the code to do the manual override to suite. Which he does, and then they immediately are brought upon the ship, and everything is seemingly back to normal. He does confirm that the systems have been brought back online, and they start talking about what their chances are of being able to defeat these time demons. And as Patonomy starts calculating, it's taking longer than normal. And then he reveals that his estimated time to calculate is now 3 years. So their time is also being affected. This is evident. Their time is being affected in a different way, but nonetheless being affected still.
Yes, yeah, Switch even worries that she's the one that kind of yells out, we're losing time. It could be months. It could be hours, but what happens when they start erasing years? If we're back to the dinosaurs, how do we fight them if we've never been born? So we start, you know, we do get at least hinted at some very big long-term world-ending type consequences for these time demons being let out.
So now, lastly, but 100% not leastly, let's talk about David. So David's in the prison speaking through the prison bars with his mother in another cell next to him. She just, you know, thinks he's just a crazy person in the cell next to her, to him or to her. He starts asking her, I really love this. He starts asking her about her family, where she comes from, you know, about her heritage. And she says she's a Roma and her family were gypsies. They didn't stay in one place for very long. And she starts to just talk about how, you know, everything is going to end here. And he tells her, no, no, he can fix it. He has a time traveler. And she says, well, then, you know, you fix this, which really catches him off guard for a minute. And his response, which was very telling, he says, well, no, this isn't about the world. This is about me. And then he starts to warn her about Farouk and about the future and how she has to protect her son, David. You know, when the time comes, he says, something was taken from me. And when the time comes, she can save his life. And then she says, David, I like that name, and smiles really big. And that lets him know that he's being tricked. That big smile starts to creep in, and he says, lies. And suddenly it's snapped out of this prison scene, and he is in just an all-black room starting to fight the two time demons. And first, as he approaches them, he's jerked back to the starting point. Before we get into his fight with the two time demons, do you want to talk about his conversation with his mother?
Yeah, I mean, really the biggest thing from that is what the quote that you gave from him, it's not about the world, it's about me. What should have been a tender moment with them, but what should have been a tender and almost sympathetic scene with David, where you again start feeling sorry for him and thinking, well, maybe he is good. It's all taken away as soon as he says that. No, this isn't about the world, it's about me. All he cares about is himself. He couldn't care less and doesn't even think about fixing anything. You have this great power, you know, and you obviously didn't have an Uncle Ben in your life to tell you that there was some great responsibility that comes with it. So he doesn't care about anything else. He only cares about himself. You know, I've said this every week. I'll continue to say it. David is not a good person. He deserves nothing. And this is yet exhibit. I believe we're on exhibit J now of why this is so.
Well, David, just if somebody could just be understanding. David deserves understanding. And if David has love, then it doesn't come to this. If he has genuine, he deserves genuine love, not manufactured weird daddy love, right?
Yeah. I did also think it was another scene where we once again see him completely dismiss the fact that he has a mental illness. When she calls him crazy for obviously in her mind, this guy's ranting and raving about all this stuff. And she calls him crazy. He says, I'm not crazy. I was just, something was taken from me when I was a kid. He's still in no way, or at least has completely rejected the thought that maybe that both things could be true, that he had this parasite in his head for years and he's a schizophrenic. He's completely still under the guise that everything that's wrong with him is because of the Shadow King. And we saw this a couple episodes ago when Sid tells Farouk he thinks he's the victim. He still has this complete facade over himself that everything that bad that I've done isn't my fault. It's all because I was abused as a kid. So if I abuse someone else, it's not really my fault.
There are probably people who do say that, though. And
oh, for sure.
All right. Sure. We're not going to go down that road.
Well, okay. We talked about this before. That's what I like about the show is that there is this underlying theme of the assaulted versus the assaultee. And We saw a little bit of this with Sid's conversation with her younger self, that she, you know, when you think about it, she really was the person who ruined the life of her mom's boyfriend by having him arrested and thrown in jail as a child molester when he didn't do anything except what he thought was having sex with his girlfriend in the shower.
Right.
And I think everybody is not a good or not a bad person here. Everybody has faults. Everybody has things that they've done that are horrible to other people, and it is this grayness and this vagueness and ambiguity, you know, ambiguousness of morality in everyone. Everyone's got a little evil, a little good inside of them, and good people do bad things and bad people do good things, whether they realize it or not. And I like that about the show, that there is no clear-cut good guy.
Yeah, that is for sure. And the lines become very blurred in this episode. Anyway, so the final scene is David fighting the time demons. He finally breaks that loop that he's in of constantly being pushed backwards as he tries to move forward. He finally says, "Acts of God, I am God," and he does the multi-arm. mini hand flip off, I called it. You know, he suddenly has many arms, just
the Doctor
like
Doctor Strange, yeah.
Right, exactly. But then his, you know, all are shooting them the bird.
Yeah.
And then he sets one of them on fire just right away, which totally freaks the other one out. And then this was my other favorite scene, other than the time in between time stuff with Farouk and Carrie and Clark. This was where, When he looks at him and says, "You want to eat something, eat shit. This isn't your time. This is my time. Go back and tell your friends or I will kill every one of you." Was just delivered so perfectly. And obviously this time demon is scared enough because he very quickly gets all of his other time demons to stop their attacks on all of our other heroes. So the one that's attacking Sid stops, the ones that are affecting the cockpit of the ship stop. The one that has already really affected Lenny has now stopped. The ones they were fighting in the time between time are suddenly all gone, which I wonder, do they think that, oh, Farouk and his big sword scared them away? I don't know about that, but what did you think of this David scene before we kind of move into the final David scene?
I,
fighting the time demons. I loved it.
Yeah, again, it was badass. It was humorous. It was a good way to just show him kind of take control. It is still him, you know, his egomaniacal, narcissistic self is, I am God. You know, this is David's time. Anything that's thrown at me, nothing that happens to me is real. Nothing that hurts me is real. All that stuff. And
it's a callback to
when he gets rid of the time demons.
It's a callback to his earlier conversation a little bit with Lenny, and I'm not sure that we touched on it completely, but he does say, anybody who gets in my way, it doesn't matter who, and he actually says Division Three. He lists off, you know, demons, Division Three, it doesn't matter, I'll slay them all.
Yeah, and especially what we Yeah, it makes me wonder if Division 3 is his next target. We're going to see here in a minute he's going to declare war on them, so yeah. He's ready to just start burning down the house.
So there was a sweet moment, David. So the time demons are eradicated for now. We do hear a little giggle at the end, but you know, you never know. But there's kind of a tender moment where David approaches Lenny, who is still crying in the street. He leans over and asks if she's okay, and he also offers to help. But interestingly, she says, no, no, she needs to feel it. So he leaves her to live within her pain for the time being because she chose that. I thought that was interesting that he, A, gave her the choice, and B, even offered to help in the first place.
Yeah, he offered her, but I think even his offering of just wiping her mind clean or using his, you know, sex vibe to help her out, she obviously didn't want it. She does want to feel that pain because, like you said, we may never see her daughter or the salmon again. So maybe she wants to remember that. And I think this is the first time since who knows since when in Lenny's life, she's actually felt real feelings, you know, real emotion. She was a drug addict when she was a person. She was a prisoner in Farouk and David's mind. She's been reborn as a body that's not hers. So this might be the first time she's really actually felt like a real human being.
Tragic. So David goes back into his house. All of his acolytes immediately surround him, and he pushes them off of him and asks where Switch is, and they tell him that she left with Carrie, to which he is very upset and starts screaming, no, 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 and then composes himself and declares war, and we cut to credits.
It's on. I think now we're in the home stretch.
For sure, 100%. We're in the home stretch. That trailer for next week, anybody who listens to this show knows, you know, we're spoiling everything. So the trailer for next week, there's that one scene where Sid is asking David if he killed everyone, and he's being so like indifferent and just kind of shrugging and being like, meh, you know? So yeah, it looks like it's going to be bad next week.
Yeah, it definitely is setting up that whether it means she's asking about people at Division Three, whether she means a time where he went to the past or future and already saw something. It leads a lot to the imagination of what she could be talking about. But yes, we're definitely to assume that David has destroyed somebody at this point.
Should we do a death draft real quick? Talk about who we think will not make it till the end of the season of our main cast?
Each pick, I think, one or two? Yeah, right, go ahead. Right. You go first.
Okay, so I'm going...
How about we... Let's run through the characters real quick, and we'll both just say a yes or no.
Okay. Well, right, we're gonna agree on a lot of them. Well, okay, we'll see. Okay, so you want to start with David?
Probably, maybe.
Do you think David's gonna make it?
No, but I don't think it'll be just a clear death. He'll either erase himself out of existence, or he'll end up in a, you know, a different dimension or something. I don't think it'll just be as simple as he's dead.
Yeah,
What about Sid?
I agree about David. Sid, I think, also is not going to make it.
I think Sid lives.
Okay. All right. What about Farouk?
Farouk does not make it. He is eradicated one way or the other.
Probably part of David going down, right?
Yes. Yeah, for sure. What about Clark?
Clark's going to make it. He's already had half his face burned off. He's fine.
The Carries.
I think the Carries will be fine as well. I'm pulling for them.
Both of them together?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I only wonder if they've been setting up the fact that they've been independent from each other now for so long that maybe I would say if one of them goes, it's male Carrie that goes and female Carrie lives. But that's a nip. I would assume they both make it.
Okay, what about Lenny?
Lenny does not make it.
Yeah, I agree. Does not make it. Oh, sad.
What about Potonomy? Does he live his life as the new Admiral Fujiyama?
Yeah, Potonomy's fine. He is what he is, but he is what he is. Unless all of the Division 3 ship is destroyed and Potonomy and the Vermilion all go kind of down at once. That could happen.
Is there anyone we're missing?
I think we got them all. I think we got them all.
Here's your next one. Do we see Oliver and Melanie?
I don't think so.
You think they're just gone at this point?
I think it's weird, but I think it's weird to not even have a coda or anything with them in it. But I think that that's what we got last season. And I haven't seen their name in the credits at all. But that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, that is a very comic-y thing, too. Like, they did kind of give them their send-off, I guess. So, we'll see.
I would like to see them again, but they just haven't seemed relevant to the story at all. It does seem odd, like I said, that no one's even saying, where's Melanie? But maybe. Okay, so the war is coming. We'll know more next week. Any final thoughts before we close out?
We're halfway home. We only have 4 more hours of Legion left.
Oh, it's so sad. But you'll still have a Legion lunchbox to enjoy for many years to come.
As I tweeted the other day, I'm going to make sure I'm always drinking either blue or red Kool-Aid out of that thermos, just so one day someone will see me doing it and the one other Legion fan in the world will notice me, I guess.
And you tweeted a picture, so everybody follow Dean on Rockdale_Tiger on Twitter to see that picture and so much more. Follow us at MikeTV1. Let us know what your thoughts are on Legion, what your predictions are, what you think about AMC's Preacher, as we are about to begin our coverage of the 4th and final season of that show coming very soon. In fact, I'm going to do a rewatch of season 3. How about you, Dean? You going to rewatch some of Preacher?
Yeah, I got to try to fit it in, but I'm also excited about The Boys starting next week on Amazon. So I got a lot to catch up and add in here in the next couple of weeks.
That's right. As we record this, The Boys, which is another Garth Ennis comic book based show by the same showrunners from Preacher. That's coming out on Amazon. I'm very, very excited about it. So we'll have a lot of TV to talk about coming up, everybody. And special thanks to Radio Labyrinth. Please leave us some comments and suggestions also on Radio Labyrinth, wherever you can rate and review podcasts. We'd love your feedback. And we will look forward to talking to everybody next week. Thank you, Dean.
Thank you, Lisa. See you next week.
Bye, everybody.